this together. We're all in this together.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The immigration debate continues to blaze, with a new fire igniting between President George W. Bush and Wisconsin Representative F. James Sensenbrenner. The Republican congressman has come under fire from immigration rights groups for drafting a bill that would classify illegal immigrants as felons. Sensenbrenner criticized the president on Wednesday, saying it was the White House that requested the two controversial felony provisions in the immigration bill. But Sensenbrenner says it now appears that the president is turning his back on the bill. Sensenbrenner said that Bush's call for allowing many of the 12 million illegal immigrants in this country eventually become citizens is really just amnesty for individuals who have broken the law.
Yanira Marino is an immigrant worker from El Salvador and the National Coordinator for Immigration with the Laborers Union. Speaking at the recent Labor Notes International Conference in Detroit, Marino said as many as 60% of rank-and-file union members still perceive immigrants as a threat to their jobs and a drag on wages.
And it's amazing for me because in the last 10 years, the big organizing drives that have happened in this country have been among and led by immigrant workers. Organized labor will not survive without the immigrants in this country.
Marino says immigration reform is needed and organized labor isn't driving the reform. But she says labor should see immigrants as allies, not as poor immigrants sneaking across the border to take jobs.
No, brothers and sisters, we're not poor immigrants coming across the border. We're fighters. And if you're willing to be with us, we'll be with you fighting for the rights of workers, rights of immigrants, and the rights of human beings. Thank you very much.
Mesaba Airlines has failed in an effort to destroy its union contracts in court. Bankruptcy Judge Gregory Kishel Thursday rejected the move by the airline. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says its members will continue to fight for a fair and equitable contract. Had those union contracts been thrown out, the airline would have faced a strike by some or all of its unions.
Steelworkers are prepared to strike if talks with Alcoa break down. The workers' contracts expired on May 31st, and negotiations are set to begin on Thursday. Union members at 15 plants authorized leadership to call a walkout against the world's biggest aluminum producer if contract negotiations break down. While both sides have expressed that they have an open dialogue and see little chafing on most contract issues, health care and retiree benefits could cause some friction at the bargaining table.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Madison Gas and Electric, a public power utility in Wisconsin's capital, is out to destroy its workers' defined benefit pensions. Dave Poklin-Kusky of IBEW Local 2304 says this is a highly profitable power company with no financial justification for trying to take workers' pensions.
I think everybody needs to recognize that if workers working for a state-regulated monopoly with a well-funded defined benefit pension plan are not going to be able to retain a pension plan, then everybody's pension is at stake.
Poklin-Kusky says that defined benefit pensions are much better for workers than 401ks, and his union, IBEW Local 2304, will never agree to end defined benefit pensions. Here's today's economic report. There were 367,000 new claims for unemployment benefits the week ending May 13th, the highest number since October of 2005. While more workers are needing to file for jobless benefits, inflation is also getting higher, putting even more pressure on family income. Things are harder for working families despite economic growth in the first quarter at an annual pace of 4.8%. Meanwhile, the number of new jobs added in April was 138,000, the lowest jobs growth since October. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's your host, Bruce Burke, with All Things Reconsidered.
All right, welcome again, one more time, to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Burke, and I am on the stream with you tonight, and glad to be back with you another Sunday evening. Gosh, I've got my days all messed up here. Oh man, what an interesting week! This morning there's a lot of interesting stuff that happened today. I guess in the realm of the Sunday morning talk shows, the Sunday morning punditry and punditocracy sharing sessions. But we'll get into that during the show tonight. But before I get too far into it, I want to take care of a few items. That is that if you are listening to this stream, you are listening to it courtesy of the White Rose Society, Ben Burch at White Rose Society. If you're interested in going and checking out his website, he archives millions of hours, several million apparently, in progressive talk radio. So you can go there and check that out by going to whiterosesociety.org. The show is brought to you by, under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. And it's you can go check that out by going to wvcarpenter.org, I believe it is. And also, let's see, if you're online listening to this show right now and you want to check out the Head On Radio Network chat room, I really do strongly encourage that you do that. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, click on the chat live button, and it'll take you right into the chat room there where there are some of the most amazing people in the world in that chat room, hanging out, talking about all kinds of neat stuff, books and whatnot this evening. Also, if you're interested in getting this stream in a WMA format, you can do that by going to or Google the last radio station. Just Google the last radio station, and that should get you right to Keith Lake's site where he does where he also streams this radio program. And actually, if you go into the chat room, he'll shoot you a link so you can go check him out. All right, now, wanted to get into a few things this evening, not the least of which is some interesting. I went around today and I sort of did some searching about, you know what, let me just get this off my chest first. I found this today and I really wanted to share this with you because to me it just sort of helps me to deal with the frustration that I get behind the Bush administration. I don't know about you guys, but I'm really, really just sick and tired of these lying, thieving, holier-than-thou, right-wing, cruel, crude, rude, gauche, coarse, crass, cocky, corrupt, dishonest, debauched, degenerate, dissolute, swaggering, lawyer-shooting, bullhorn-shouting, infrastructure-destroying, buck-passing, hysterical, criminal, history-defying, finger-pointing, puppy-stomping, roommate-appointing, pretzel-choking, collateral-damaging, aspersion-casting, wedding party bombing, clear cutting, I'm just getting started, torturing, jobs outsourcing, torture outsourcing, election fixing, women's rights eradicating, Medicare cutting, uncouth, spiteful, boorish, vengeful, jingoistic, homophobic, xenophobic, xylophonic, racist, sexist, ageist, fascist, cashist, audaciously stupid, brazenly selfish, lethally ignorant, journalist purchasing, genocide ignoring, corporation kissing, poverty inducing, crooked, coercive, autocratic, primitive, uppity, high-handed, domineering, arrogant, inhuman, inhumane, inbred, inept, insipid, incapable, incompetent, ineffectual, insolent, insincere, know-it-all, snotty, pompous, contemptuous, supercilious, gutless, spineless, shameless, avaricious, noxious, poisonous, imperious, merciless, graceless, tactless, brutish, brutal, Carl roving, backward-thinking, persistent, vegetative state, grandstanding, nuclear option threatening, evolution denying, irony deprived, consciously depraved, conceited, perverted, peremptory invading, 35-day vacation taking, bribe soliciting, hellish, smarty pants, loudmouth, bullying, swell-headed, ethics eluding, domestic spying, medical marijuana busting, Halliburtoning, narcissistic, undiplomatic, blustering, malevolent, demonizing, Duke Cunninghamming, hectoring, dry drunk, Muslim baiting, hurricane disregarding, oil company hugging, judge packing, science disputing, faith-based advocating, armament selling, nonsense spewing, education ravaging, whiny, insane, unscrupulous, lily-livered, greedy, fraudulent, delusional, CIA outing, redistricting, anybody who disagrees with them slandering, fact-twisting, ally alienating, betraying, chicken hawk sellout, quizzling, God and flag-waving, scaremongering, Cindy Sheehan libeling, smirking, bastardly, voting machine tampering, sociopathic, cowardly, treasonous, constitution shredding, oppressive, vulgar, antagonistic, trust funding, non-tipping, tyrannizing, peace-hating, war water, air, and ground and media polluting, deadly, traitorous, con man, swindling, pernicious, lethal, illegal, haughty, venomous, virulent, mephitic, egoistic, bloodthirsty, yellow belly, hypocritical, Oedipal. Did I say evil? I'm not sure if I said evil because I want to make sure I say evil. Evil. Cretinous, slime buckets in the Bush administration that I could just spit. Impeachment? Hell no. Impalement. Upon the sharp and righteous sword of the people's justice. Make it a curtain rod, because it would hurt more. There, I feel better. Now let's get on with the radio program, now that I've gotten that off my chest. All right, now, yes, I was just advised that I should tell you how I really feel, and I think I just did it. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was actually written by Will Durst, And it's in the June 2006 edition of the Progressive magazine. So go check that out if you're so inclined. I'm wondering if the man used a certain thesaurus there to check that out to write that. But I also wanted to bring to your attention, now that I've gotten my feelings all out in the open about how I feel about the Bush administration tonight. Not feeling very nice tonight. I just had to deal with a crying kid and a teacher that's being mean, and so I'm armed for bear. Okay. I ran into a blog today called Thoughts from Baghdad, and apparently this is the blog of a lady named Fatima, who was born and raised in the United States, and these are some of her thoughts on living in post-Saddam Baghdad. And you can check this out by going to thoughtsfrombaghdad.blogspot.com. Really interesting website. It's kind of cool how she really brings it right home. I mean, this is her sort of daily journal about what's going on there in Baghdad, and or not daily, but nearly daily. And I'm going to read you one of these because I think it's kind of cool. And that is this. This is entitled 1 Minute Later. You can go check this out. Thoughtsfrombaghdad.blogspot.com. This past Thursday, my husband's cousin, neighbor, close friend drove her to the barbershop where he and my husband are regulars in the Jamia district, I think it is. He parked his car across the street just before he entered the store. As he was turning towards something, a roadside bomb hidden in the median went off. Apparently, it was targeting a National Guard envoy driving by. The barbershop cousin A was heading into had his windows blown out and his ceiling caved in. Bystanders were injured and one man was killed. In the process, cousin A's driver's side window was shattered. Thankfully, he wasn't in the car at the time. He got away with one cut in his arm, but one of his friends had his face all swollen from the shards of glass which had entered it, and many others were more seriously injured. That's the way things happen here and everywhere else, for that matter. You go on with your daily life realizing that something might happen at any moment and hoping that you are 1 minute earlier or 1 minute later. She goes on to write, note, the National Guard are constantly under attack here in Baghdad, along with the Iraqi police and the American forces. The problem is they set up patrols and checkpoints in areas that are close to residences, and then when they get attacked, they start firing their guns like crazy without any concern for where their ammo lands. Numerous home and car windows have been blown out in this way, and needless to say, people have been injured. As I've mentioned before, in Jamia District, it's a never-ending cycle where the insurgency attacks the Iraqi forces. So they move in and set up checkpoints and shoot around like crazy, and the insurgency continues attacking them in these residential business areas. People stop coming to these areas, businesses start closing down, residents start moving out, and one or more neighborhood has been closed down. That's today's post from this blog, and I really encourage you to go by and check it out. She's actually an American who was born and raised, or she was born and raised in the States, but she's now living in Baghdad, and it's really an interesting. It gives you drives home what happens as a result of war. Thoughtsfrombaghdad.blogspot.com. So do go check that out. You know, I've also got a number of other stories that we want to get into this evening. You know, El Torturador Alberto Gonzalez was on this week this morning. On ABC News, and he had some interesting things to say about journalists. And I also have some other interesting audio from that same program this morning where John Edwards was also on there speaking his mind about what he thinks about the president and you know, some of the issues of the day. So we will get over to that very shortly. Again, if you want to get in on this radio program, you can do so. It is Conversation Radio. And you can do that by going to, you can dial in at 1-877-443-2366. Or you can do that by sending me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
You know why your head swivels on your neck? So you can share the road with motorcycles. Watch for bikes when you drive and help make this a safe riding season. A message from this station in the AMA on the web at amadirectlink.com.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
You're back on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. When we went over to the break, I was just doing a real quick recap here. I shot you a blog that you should go check out. That's Thoughts from Baghdad, and that's B-A-G-H-D-A-D, thoughtsfrombaghdad.blogspot.com. And I just wanted to bring this to your attention because if you're not really sure about if you've never heard the perspective of someone who is currently living there and the stories that they have of some of the things that are going on in Iraq from someone who is there, but you know it's really a good way to go and check that out. Wanted to give you some just because I was scrolling down, I found it. This was written. Let's see. On Sunday, May 14th, so a week ago today, Fatima writes, sorry to inundate you with news of my sleepless nights, but last night was worse than the night before, though I don't think that was possible. Our large neighborhood generator is down for another 10 days at least. In the meantime, my husband went out yesterday and bought a smaller generator for our house. Supposedly, we should have been able to turn on the air conditioner unit in our bedroom on it, but it didn't happen. So we attempted to sleep in a hot bedroom with a fan sending hot air our way. Not easy. Anyways, here's some Iraqi electricity facts. Yesterday, these were the times we had governmental electricity in our area. 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. 2:30 to 3:30 a.m. This has been the schedule for a few days now, but we never know exactly when electricity will come. It depends on the Ministry of Electricity's whims. Most households own a small generator for lights, TV, fans, and pay to use about 5 to 10 amperes of electricity from a neighborhood generator, not enough for an air conditioning unit. And I wanted to bring this to your attention because this was a week ago. 4 hours of electricity a day they're getting this electricity 4 hours a day. Now this is 3 years into the war, this is 3 years into the occupation. Because March 19th was the day when we supposedly declared victory. Or when Bush declared victory, at any rate. Okay, so we're going to get away from the Baghdad blog for a moment. I wanted to bring to your attention some things that happened this morning on some of the talk shows. And I don't know if any of you watched any of this, and maybe you did. And if you know, you're welcome to comment on some of this. But the first thing I wanted to get into was to play you. Let's see here if I can pull up this particular. This was another day. This particular clip is from a journalist named Brian Ross. He works for APC, and he went on a show called Reliable Sources. It's actually hosted by Howard Kurtz, who, as you may well know, is a writer for the Washington Post, and talked about what he's been experiencing in regard to being tapped by the government. Now, you know, the government told us. We were told, I think it was one day last week, I'm trying to get my facts straight here, we were told one day last week that there are actually some journalists that were being, that had been tapped, and that, you know, I believe it was Brian Ross of ABC News, gentleman from the New York Times, and also someone from the Washington Post, investigative reporters whose, you know, they were basically told that they had to change their cell phones because they had been under surveillance. So Agnes, if you have that loaded, go ahead and run that clip. ABC News, Brian Ross.
Well, a confidential source and a leak, and a very good tip that was surprising to us. Someone told a senior federal official told my colleague Rich Esposito that we know who you are calling. You should get some new cell phones and quick. And that's what we know, Howard. We don't know how it is they know who we're calling. We've been trying to figure that out. But this source is so good that we take it very seriously.
Just on a personal level, what was your reaction to learn that law enforcement officials, according to this source, are analyzing the numbers that you dial, presumably in an effort to track down your other confidential sources?
Well, you know, I guess in an abstract way, I always thought that was likely or possible. But once I actually heard this specific information, and this person knew a couple of specific calls, it was truly alarming and made you think, well, my gosh, what are we going to do about this? I mean, it means a lot more in-person visits. I'm working on a big story now with people who are confidential sources inside the Federal Air Marshal Service. They were all alarmed that they might be exposed as talking with me in violation of rules. So it's of great concern.
Well, what other news organizations are having their phone calls tracked, according to your informant?
We were told, reporters at the New York Times and the Washington Post, and it seemed consistent with the information we know that the CIA has made several criminal referrals to the Department of Justice, the FBI, based on stories that the Post and the Times have run about CIA secret prisons and a Jim Risen story at the New York Times about NSA wiretapping. In both cases, those agencies have confirmed that criminal investigations have begun. And when we checked with the FBI, they put out a statement that essentially said, we take logical investigative steps, starting with the phone records of the government agencies, and then you sort of read through and parse out what they say. It seems that if they go after reporters, they say they do it in a legal fashion.
Not exactly a hard denial. Were you given any names of journalists who might be on the receiving end of this?
Other than Esposito and Ross, no. But I'm assuming your colleague Dana Priest and Risen and others at the Times who have done, you know, a lot of important work that involved information that the CIA, I assume, presumes to be classified, and they see that as a violation of the law, and that starts the process by which they essentially can use provisions of the Patriot Act if they chose, or just a grand jury to pursue it. And it makes me feel, in a way, and this is, I think, the disturbing part, you know, as if we are drug dealers or terrorists trying to traffic in information, and should we be using bags full of quarters like old mafia capos to avoid having our phone calls traced. And I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. I don't think any other reporter is either. We're trying to cover these stories, which are difficult, and but which are very important.
In those old movies, reporters would go to phone booths to make the calls, but there aren't that many phone booths anymore.
You can't find them anymore, right?
But now let me take the other side. If sources are leaking classified information, which is illegal on their part, why shouldn't the government be able to investigate and track down which reporters they're talking to?
Well, I think they should be able to investigate if they feel there's a crime, but I think going after reporters' phone calls and phone records is a way of chilling and preventing us from doing our job. And by, if you are chilling reporters, you're chilling the First Amendment. And I think that the public's right to know in this case supersedes these issues. If on their own they can figure it out, I think that's fair game in a way. Going after our phone calls, tracking them. We've received no notification formally from the phone companies or from the government that our records have been pulled. If in fact they have done that and we don't know about it, that's very upsetting.
And that was Brian Ross of ABC News. And Brian apparently had his, now I also read another account of this, and apparently what he's saying is right on target. And as he said, this has the effect of chilling free speech and chilling the First Amendment and chilling, you know, any reporters who want to go and seek out the truth. I mean, you know, it just is... you know, it just is absolutely atrocious, first of all, that they would do this, you know, without, I mean, again, guys, we're talking about a government that believes very strongly that its wiretapping of domestic citizens, I don't know if that's an oxymoron or not. Anyway, this government absolutely believes that the tapping of citizens in this country is completely legal and above board because the president says it is. Not because it's based in law, which it's not. Not because, they're bypassing the FISA court, which was set up strictly for this purpose. But because the president says it is. And we'll get over to some other clips about Gonzalez and what El Torturador thinks about this when we come back. We're going to go to a break here real quick. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things Considered. You can get in on the radio program by dialing 1-877-443-2366 or email bruce@birch.com. We'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Now it comes out. The biggest beneficiaries of Bush's immigration speech the other night are the friendly folks at Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, or Northrop Grumman. They're submitting bids for a multi-billion-dollar federal contract to build Bush's so-called virtual fence along the border. This, according to the New York Times. Bad enough that Bush is going to militarize the border. Now he's privatizing the militarization of the border. The administration is asking the contractors to devise and build a whole new border strategy, the Times reports. Listen to Michael Jackson, Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, as he sought out bids on this work. This is an unusual invitation, he said. We're asking you to come back and tell us how to do our business. The private companies will decide what equipment these Border Patrol agents will use, how and when they're dispatched to spots along the border, where the agents assemble the captured immigrants, and how they process them, the New York Times article said. These are basic law enforcement jobs. They belong to government. But under Bush, they're all for sale to his buddies in the corporate suites. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves, too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
You're back on All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and that was the inimitable Mr. Frank Zappa in a song there. Trying to remember the name of it. It escapes my mind at the moment. But anyway, glad to have you back with us. Hope you are doing well and wrapping up your weekend with All Things Reconsidered. When I went over to the break, I was it's called We're Not Alone, by the way. Thank you very much, Agnes. When we went over the break, we were talking about, I ran a clip from Brian Ross of ABC News. He's an investigative journalist with ABC News, and he was talking about the chilling effect that the CIA and FBI, et cetera, and all of the other wonderful little acronyms of the United States government these days. The chilling effect that these agencies have had on journalists by tracking their phone calls and trying to find out who their contacts were within the government who were leaking specific information regarding secret prisons and you know, the NSA wiretapping scandal and the CIA, and just all this stuff, you know. And so Ross went on a show this morning called Reliable Sources. Well, also this morning, El Torturador himself, Alberto Gonzalez, went on this week with George Snuffleupagus. I mean, Stephanopoulos, I think it's his name, Snuffleupagus. Anyway, I know it is. George Stephanopoulos, and I'll be okay, George, if you call me Bruce Birchtree, it's fine with me. And interview, you know, he was on there with Stephanopoulos this morning and talked about a number of different things, including the immigration saga, journalists, and the NSA investigation, etc. Agnes, if you would go ahead and run the clip on Gonzalez on journalists.
I will say that I understand very much the role that the press plays in our society, the protection under the First Amendment. We want to promote and respect the right of the press, but it can't be the case that that right trumps over the right that Americans would like to see, that the ability of the federal government to go after criminal activity. And so those two principles have to be accommodated. In my judgment, they can be accommodated. They have been accommodated, and we will continue to accommodate both those principles going forward.
So in other words, what he's saying is that, Brian Ross, we understand that you're trying to expose our inner workings and some of the illegal things that we're doing, but that's a crime for you to expose our illegal things. You cannot legally expose our illegal things. So, Mr. Brian Ross, if you are talking to these people and you are reporting data on our illegal programs, Mr. Brian Ross, then you may have to go to jail for that. And he's also, Mr. Gonzalez also went on to say some other things about that in regards to, I mean, he's just a very chilling thing, I mean, you know, to watch this. Being that I am a member, I guess I'm a member of the press, I'm a pseudo-journalist, I do talk radio, and I also do news during the week for Bob Kincaid's show, Head On with Bob Kincaid. I see this as, I mean, you know, at what point do they draw the line and say, okay, we'll let you do your job. We want you to go back to reporting the farm report. We don't want you to actually report on anything that matters, is what they're trying to say. This government, this particular administration, totally believes in their illegality, in the legality of their illegality. And I think that this is what they're doing. Is they're, you know, Nixon admitted what he was doing. Nixon was a better man than George Bush, at least. And that's my opinion on that, because he recognized that his principles, he had violated his own principles, and resigned. This president doesn't have any. So therefore, he believes that whatever he says is law, and that's the way it is. And we just need to get over it. Having said all that, let's go over to the telephone lines. We are now being joined by our friend Jim on line one. Jim, how are you doing? Hello, Jim. How are you doing, man?
Huh.
All right. Okay. We don't have Jim. Let's go to Rob on line two. Rob, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, Rob. How are you doing tonight, man? Uh-huh. Welcome to All Things, and what's going on?
Well, you know, I'm worried about the future police state of the United States of America.
Well, I would tend to agree with you there. I'm also equally worried, especially in light of what Mr. Alberto Gonzalez said this morning on Meet the Press.
That's scary, isn't it? I mean, come on.
It's incredibly scary.
Jailing journalists for reporting the truth? Are we in China, Russia, or Soviet Union? I'm not sure anymore.
The other day, I guess it was Friday, Bob Kincaid's show. He had a kind of a rough moment there with the computer, and I just happened to be around and was able to sort of take over the show and keep it going. And one of the things that I talked about Friday, I did the 14 points of fascism and talked about each one and gave an example of each one. And someone in the chat room, I'm not sure who it was exactly, but they said that we have already slipped past fascism and are now steadily grinding toward totalitarianism. And I struggle with that, because I know on the one hand that we still have a certain amount of freedom to move about. We don't have checkpoints yet.
Yeah.
Yet. But on the same token, you know, we have these overall policies that the government has created, such as this one, that's just downright scary.
You know, there's so many things to worry about. Having a military uniform in front of a civilian agency like CIA. I mean, he goes up there with his general's uniform, and we all say, wow, you know, he's capable. You know, this is a civilian agency.
It is a civilian agency. And, you know, the other part of that, too, is that we have a situation. Well, you know, and I got to tell you, you know, the CIA itself, history of it, and I did some investigative stuff or some research regarding this back probably 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, the precursor was the OSS.
Yeah.
And Wild Bill Donovan and and some of these other guys who were big time military dudes.
Yeah.
Were the ones who essentially created the CIA.
Right.
So I mean, I've heard people say, well, this is the first time we've ever had a, that's not really true because, you know, we haven't in recent memory had a military person to run the CIA, but essentially it was created by military people and really for a militaristic purpose anyway.
I think the problem is that, what the government is trying to do is familiarize our populace with images of police state, the 2004 Republican convention had police in military garb. Essentially, they had the flak jackets and the AK-47s, and I mean, if you look, I don't like to suggest people prefer Alex Jones. He's kind of he's a self-promoter. But if you look at his 2004 documentary, you can see these guys. They're wearing flak jackets, they're using AK-47s. The New York Police Department bought they had these military vehicles with gun turrets on the top. I mean, I'm sorry, but really neat gun turrets at New York City?
Well, you know, we've got to be safe because we're so scared, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I think...
presidential speech that actually uses the word terror 97 times. It's ridiculous. We want to be afraid. Franklin Roosevelt said there's nothing to fear but fear itself. George Bush says there's nothing to fear but fear. Please fear.
It's kind of interesting because by talking more about all of their efforts to keep us safe, they have engendered the fear, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They want the fear. I don't know how many people talk about the Reichstag fire in 1933. It was right after Hitler was elected that he attacked his own parliament and then... used that threat of terrorism to, enact laws that, abridge free speech and the right to protest. And, of course, it was the Jews' fault, but, now it's the Muslims' fault.
Yeah, it is absolutely reprehensible. The other thing, too, that I wanted to sort of say is that, as you mentioned, Franklin Roosevelt said that the only thing to fear is fear itself. The crazy thing about this, the last 5 years, has been, or to me, first of all, we've never ever once been asked to sacrifice anything.
Of course.
This has never been that... Yes. Oh, joy. This has never... that was to my producer. There has never been a situation where we have been told by the American government, you're going to have to be in this for the long haul, and we're going to ask you to you know, in your communities to try to do things to help, blah, 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 blah. It's been more about, you know, the war on terror, the war on terror, and, you know, and we're trying to keep you safe. And in the middle of all this, they created laws that restrict our civil liberties like never, ever, ever before. I had an argument recently with an editorialist here in Greensboro where I live about, you know, we had an argument over whether or not the NSA wiretapping scandal was a bigger deal than the Japanese internments of 1940 in the 1940s. And I said to him, 100 million people being affected and whose civil rights and civil liberties are being violated, to me, is a little bit larger than, you know, I don't know how many Japanese were eventually interned, which was wrong also, but that there was really no comparison when you did the numbers.
Of course. And one of the things that bothers me the most is, you know, I listen to a lot of radio talk show, and one of the most common comments is that, I haven't done anything wrong. If the government wants to listen to my, you know, telephone calls or my email communications, they're fine. That's fine. That's no problem. Well, you know what? You know, if they're listening to John Edwards' communications, you know, maybe he has a psychiatrist. You know, well, you know, you can destroy him. That's not what America is supposed to mean.
Exactly. Well, the other part of that too, Rob, is this: is I reframe that and I say, well, if I've done nothing wrong, there's no reason to surveil me.
Right.
So for them to say that is absolutely bogus. I mean, you know, if they need to go back and learn how to learn civics again.
It's like the checkpoints. If you haven't done anything wrong, you move right through. But if you have done something wrong, we can arrest you. Well, you know, that's great in Israel, maybe. And that's great in Soviet Russia, but that's not what America is supposed to mean.
Yeah, I totally agree. Rob, I've got some other callers I need to get to, but I really do absolutely appreciate you calling in tonight and being a part of the radio program.
Thanks a lot, Bruce.
And I hope you have a wonderful evening. Hopefully we'll hear from you next week.
Probably will.
Okay, man.
Thanks a lot.
Have a wonderful week. And that was our good friend Rob from New York, who called in to have some input on the violations of the First Amendment that this government is embarking upon at this moment. We do have a caller. I think Jim is back. Jim, on line two. Jim, are you there?
For you?
Hey, Jim.
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
Okay. You know,
fantastic.
Pardon me. I'm sorry. You were
saying... Yeah, I just was saying what's on your mind, that's all.
Oh, basically, you know, the last caller mentioned the Reichstag fire on, I think, February 27th, 1933. Of course, that was the thing that Hitler used to help pass the Enabling Act. By August of 34, Hindenburg was dead, which he combined the post of chancellor and president into Führer. And then a year and a half later, you had the Nuremberg Laws promulgated, which defined what the Jews' role in German society would be. And then, of course, shortly thereafter, you had the T-34 euthanasia programs being put into effect. It's really frightening to see parallels in history. And one thing that you mentioned a couple of nights ago were the 14 points of fascism.
Yeah.
And all that ties into this very, you know, quite directly, I think. And I just finished a book called by James Bamford, about the National Security Administration, A Body of Secrets, and there's another book that came out before that called Chatter. I mean, they have the computers at Fort Meade to do this. I mean, these computers are supercomputers, so they can do like something like 33 billion calculations per second. So, you know, it's definitely in place, and it's a very frightening thing, but what I want to ask you is this, and it's a rhetorical question maybe, but what is their operational definition of what is illegal?
That's a good question, and I think I think there is no objective answer to that.
I mean, if he's an insider, I guess it could be anything he wants it to be, right?
I'm you know, that's exactly what I said earlier. I think that's absolutely the truth. I mean, whatever he says is legal is legal.
Well, you know,
that comes from that whole unitary executive theory thing that they're operating on, which is really essentially, you know, right out of the playbook of totalitarianism.
Well, basically, I can't see much difference between the unitary presidency and the Fuhrer principle.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I don't either.
Because, I mean, basically, in Germany, all law could be melted like ice cream before any decree from the Reich Chancellery, from Hitler's office, you know?
And it sounds like that's what's, I mean, it doesn't sound like that's what's happening here as well with the signing statements. How many laws? 750 laws that he has subverted?
Yeah, quite a few.
You know, so if he says it's legal, it's legal. If he says it's illegal, it's illegal. It's not illegal to break the law if you're the government. It's illegal if you report on the breaking of the law by the press.
Well, you know, there, you know, the free press is being strangled, you know, effectively. And I guess they want all the free press in this country on TV and whatever just to be another, I guess, duplicate of Fox News.
That's what I think. And actually, you were talking about the fascist, the points of fascism. This was number 6, the controlled mass media. Was number 6 on the 14 points.
I mean, when you brought that forth the other night, I mean, that I was very impressed by that. And, you know, it's it also scares the hell out of me, to be honest with you. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, there's nothing I can really do about it. I mean, you know, there isn't, to be honest with you. There's nothing I can do.
I do think there is something we can do. I think that we have to work harder for such an overwhelming electorate to boot these guys out of office, that they cannot deny it. And I don't know that it'll happen then, but we got to try.
Well,
because if we don't try, then we've lost our will.
Well, this is true. This is true. And I didn't mean to have a defeatist attitude about it, but I mean, it almost seems at certain points insurmountable. I mean, with the people that will be left behind when they leave office and the people that they will have in positions of government that are already schooled to follow their doctrines. You know, I was talking the other night about Patrick Henry University and some of the stuff like that and how many people they have from that school and government internship programs and the presidential internship program and stuff like that.
Yep.
And so, you know, they're definitely going to leave residuals. Even if they should be voted out of office, they're going to have a lot of people there who are going to be following, I guess, their masters or whomever.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Porter Goss's job to go to the CIA and rid it of any Democrats that might be left?
I believe so, yeah.
You know? And now we've got Hayden in there who is going, or about to be, I should say, who is going to create... You know, I can only, you know, it's scary to think about what he could do with the CIA. It really is.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, like I say, I'm sure J. Edgar Hoover is real happy about all this. I mean, he would have loved it.
Yeah.
You know? Of course, compared to this operation, Hoover, small potatoes. I mean, he just liked to get wiretaps of people he didn't like and people he could make fun of and play them at parties. But good Lord, what's happening here? It's just mind-blowing.
Yes, it does. It is absolutely mine. But Jim, I appreciate your call. We gotta take our top of the hour break, man.
So you have a good evening and keep up the good work. Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jim. Have a wonderful night, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Likewise. Out here.
Okay. Okay. And that was our good friend from an undisclosed location in the northern hemisphere. You can, if you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email at bruce@brucebirch.com. That's bruce@brucebirch.com, and Birch is spelled with a U, bruce@brucebirch.com. And, folks, we'll be right back after our break and then our top of the hour workers independent. I'll be right back.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The immigration debate continues to blaze, with a new fire igniting between President George W. Bush and Wisconsin Representative F. James Sensenbrenner. The Republican congressman has come under fire from immigration rights groups for drafting a bill that would classify illegal immigrants as felons. Sensenbrenner criticized the president on Wednesday, saying it was the White House that requested the two controversial felony provisions in the immigration bill. But Sensenbrenner says it now appears that the president is turning his back on the bill. Sensenbrenner said that Bush's call for allowing many of the 12 million illegal immigrants in this country eventually become citizens is really just amnesty for individuals who have broken the law.
Yanira Marino is an immigrant worker from El Salvador and the National Coordinator for Immigration with the Laborers Union. Speaking at the recent Labor Notes International Conference in Detroit, Marino said as many as 60% of rank-and-file union members still perceive immigrants as a threat to their jobs and a drag on wages.
And it's amazing for me because in the last 10 years, the big organizing drives that have happened in this country have been among and led by immigrant workers. Organized labor will not survive without the immigrants in this country.
Marino says immigration reform is needed and organized labor isn't driving the reform. But she says labor should see immigrants as allies, not as poor immigrants sneaking across the border to take jobs.
No, brothers and sisters, we're not poor immigrants coming across the border. We're fighters. And if you're willing to be with us, we'll be with you fighting for the rights of workers, rights of immigrants, and the rights of human beings. Thank you very much.
Mesaba Airlines has failed in an effort to destroy its union contracts in court. Bankruptcy Judge Gregory Kishel Thursday rejected the move by the airline. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says its members will continue to fight for a fair and equitable contract. Had those union contracts been thrown out, the airline would have faced a strike by some or all of its unions.
Steelworkers are prepared to strike if talks with Alcoa break down. The workers' contracts expired on May 31st, and negotiations are set to begin on Thursday. Union members at 15 plants authorized leadership to call a walkout against the world's biggest aluminum producer if contract negotiations break down. While both sides have expressed that they have an open dialogue and see little chafing on most contract issues, health care and retiree benefits could cause some friction at the bargaining table.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Madison Gas and Electric, a public power utility in Wisconsin's capital, is out to destroy its workers' defined benefit pensions. Dave Poklin-Kusky of IBEW Local 2304 says this is a highly profitable power company with no financial justification for trying to take workers' pensions.
I think everybody needs to recognize that if workers working for a state-regulated monopoly with a well-funded defined benefit pension plan are not going to be able to retain a pension plan, then everybody's pension is at stake.
Polkland-Kusky says that defined benefit pensions are much better for workers than 401ks, and his union, IBEW Local 2304, will never agree to end defined benefit pensions. Here's today's economic report. There were 367,000 new claims for unemployment benefits the week ending May 13th, the highest number since October of 2005. While more workers are needing to file for jobless benefits, inflation is also getting higher, putting even more pressure on family income. Things are harder for working families despite economic growth in the first quarter at an annual pace of 4.8%. Meanwhile, the number of new jobs added in April was 138,000, the lowest jobs growth since October. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
That's right. Tell me, what's the reason? welcome back to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. It's about 4 minutes after the hour, and you're back on radio for a free America. And before I go back over to the phones, I'd like to remind you of our telephone number. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. We'll get you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network, where my able producer will take the call, and you'll have a conversation with her right before you have a conversation with me. So, if you're so inclined, you can do it by dialing that number. Now, you can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. bruce@brucebirch.com. If you're listening to this via podcast, you can listen to this show live every Sunday evening from 10 until midnight, Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Daylight Time, or whatever the hell time we're on now. I can never keep up. Eastern Time, 7 to 9 Pacific, and all the time zones in between. And you can do that if you're so inclined. All right. So, and also you can check us out at the headonradionetwork.com. All right. Let's go back over to the phones and take care of our telephone caller who is on the line with us. I believe Luke from Knoxville is on the line. Luke, how are you doing?
I'm fine, Bruce. How are you?
I'm doing great, man, but I'll get better.
I know. No, dude, but you were talking this morning about the thing with Brian Ross on the reliable source. Do you notice, though, in all this NSA stuff, other than on the liberal side, you're still not hearing anybody mention Choice Point, which I think is what they're using, is they're using Choice Point as kind of a dummy it's not, but they're using it like a dummy corporation. You know, they send the materials through Choice Point then to the government so they can say, well, you know, the phone companies, no, they didn't give us the information.
Right, right.
But, of course, if there's actually the company, then the company gave it to them.
Right. There's actually a corporation that has been developed, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I read about this the other day, that this corporation was actually created to for this specific purpose, and that there's actually enough business. I mean, it blows my mind.
Well,
how much are they getting paid? Do you know how much they're getting paid to do this?
I don't know, but I do remember reading it was one of those, amazingly enough, no-bid contracts. Surprise, surprise. And like I say, most people, you know, when you say Choice Point, most people go, I've heard that name before, until you say, oh, don't you remember the felons list in Florida?
Yes.
You know, this is Choice Point, who was working for Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris. You know, let's see how many African-Americans we can knock off of the voting rolls. This is the same Choice Point that I believe it's in Illinois that they got a whole bunch of cases overturned because they found out Choice Point was manipulating some of the DNA data in trials.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. See, nowadays with DNA, it's not just hang on to the blood. They you know, convert it into mathematics, you know what I mean, into the record. And apparently up there at Choice Point, it was hired by some place, I believe it was in Illinois, and they had to reverse a whole bunch of cases because they found out that, by the way, they're kind of manipulating the numbers. But let me go on to one other thing about the media.
Okay.
Normally we jump on Fox Today. Can I jump on CNN?
Please do.
I tell you what, first of all, now I accept the fact that it's kind of a one-time thing, but you did notice, though, that on Reliable Sources today, they took up half the show with an interview with Mike Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I accept, you know, Mike Wallace has a great place in the history, but if you're going to do that, well, shoot, give him an hour and let him do a real interview. Don't take up the time on the one critic's show that's supposed to be the critic's show of the industry.
Right, you know? Exactly.
So, the other show, if you ever watch it, have you ever watched their On the Story?
I confess to you that I'm not a huge watcher of the news on cable, just
well,
because they seem to just regurgitate what everybody else says. But anyway,
well, you know up there where they used to do the Crossfire shows at George Washington, I think it is.
Okay.
So, okay. Well, they do these stories up there, and they have the reporters out, and then they ask questions of the audience, and these are such canned questions that it's like you might as well just have a newsreader there reading the questions. Do you know what I mean? There are never any
exactly.
really controversial questions. They're just setups. You know, here's the softball. Now hit what you want to with it. And you know what I mean? It's like, say, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if y'all are going to do that, do Larry King at least take calls or something, you know, or take emails.
Exactly.
And if you want Cafferty, at least read something, you know, to ask reporters. But these things are such setups. You know what I mean? There's nothing ever at all controversial. I mean, not other than what the story may be, but you know what I mean? The questions are never. You know, the subject may be, but usually it's a softball question. You know, well, why did you do the story like this? You know?
Why? Yeah, exactly. Why did you write about, you know, I mean, it's the non-question about a big issue, and it's meant to deflect from a real answer.
Well,
you know,
it's like an NSA thing. I mean, they didn't ask any real questions. You know, nobody had to ask any questions about it. They barely talked about it today.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and you know, Colbert, when he did his little gig there at the National Press Club,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that he was poking fun at was the journalists. He said, "Now you journalists, you're doing a real good job, but you need to remember, here's the rules: the White House comes out, makes a statement, you dictate it and print it. That's your job."
Well, you know, I've been reading. I keep a book in the car, you know, just so whenever you get stuck in traffic, you got something to read. And I've been
sure.
reading the What Liberal Media, you know, the one,
yeah.
and I've been, it's been fun, to, well, not fun, but you know what I mean? It's eye-opening when you read this stuff, and you read things like about the 2000, mostly the Clinton administration into the 2000 election, when you realize that the media was totally set, you know, we're going to get Bill Clinton. We don't care how we have to do it. If we can't get Bill Clinton, well, then we're going to make sure we nail Al Gore. You know what I mean? When you see these people
yeah.
like Broder and some of these people who are like the opinion is like, well, Bill Clinton doesn't belong here. He's just visiting in Washington. You know, it's like it's our town. You know, how dare you come in here and pretend like you belong?
Exactly.
But,
well,
go ahead.
Who's the book by?
Oh, stuck in the car. gosh, I'm sorry. I can't think of it all of a sudden.
Well, just remember next week and bring it in.
Yeah. But you know, it's one of these things where it's like, say, you know, they give you just enough of the story so that you think they've covered it, and it's like, okay. It's like this morning. Actually they do it, I think, like on Saturday night. They repeat it. But the thing that got to me was they had Jamie McIntyre talking about the Pentagon, you know, the photos they released, the supposed tape. Which actually is nothing
sure.
more than a bunch of freeze frame photos they just kind of linked together to pretend it's a tape. And nowhere in there did anybody explain where all the other videotapes that they confiscated are. You know, they show that one from the parking lot camera where you get that one frame with something silver across it. And it's
yeah.
like, no one bothered to ask, you know, what happened to the tape from the Sheraton? What happened to the tape from the gas station? What happened to the tape from the ATMs that were all confiscated by the government? You know?
Well, what happened to the black boxes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what happened to all the audio tapes from all the traffic controllers? You know, telling what was going on at the time. Why have all those tapes been destroyed?
You know, I was talking to Andy from the UK there on Bob's show on Friday night, and Andy was basically saying, you know, there's no way in hell that that bird could have done the maneuvering that it did to be able to do what it did. It's just impossible.
Not that close to the ground. And like yeah. I say, you know, I mean, there would have been, you know, there's so many nowadays, and especially in a town like Washington, there's so many security cameras, you know, on top of buildings. And, God, the Pentagon, no telling how many cameras there are on the exterior. That you can't tell me there weren't photos of what happened or video, you know what I mean. But there's got to be, you know what I mean. It's just, like I say, down the memory hole, so to speak.
Exactly.
Been down to either the shredder or the incinerator. But you were talking also about this morning, if you watched this, I call it Meet the Republicans. So Meet the Press.
Yeah, really.
I was listening to reading some of the stuff on Huffington Post, and they're right. If you looked at it 2 weeks ago when they had Pelosi on, Nancy Pelosi, he interrupted her. He didn't let her hardly get a sentence out without interrupting her, you know, asking another question. Then if you watched it last week, he had Newt on, and it was like they could have took the camera off of Russert because you wouldn't have known he was there for 30 minutes. He just sat there and let Newt just run on. And every time Newt would say something that it was a lie, I just kept waiting. Go, come on, say something. I mean, he was still talking about a connection between Al Qaeda and Saddam. And Russia,
yeah, you know,
didn't say a word.
They're doing that. They're really. I mean, it just amazes me. They're doing that all the time now. And you know, it was never proven, and there's absolutely no basis in fact. And yet, you know, Rumsfeld himself comes out and says it quite a bit.
Well, I mean, Well, the one who really comes out and says it, but he doesn't do too many things, is Cheney. Every time Cheney talks, he's talking about it like it's, you know, 5 years ago. You know, he's still trying to build up support for the war to go in.
And Bush actually did recently also do the same thing when he said that the insurrection on Flight 93 was the shot heard round the world of World War III.
Well, you know, it's like the thing. Also, the thing with the Pentagon and the Flight 93 is, you know, you could almost not say excuse the word, but you know, the first two at the World Trade Center were fairly close together. But most people don't keep you know, it kind of goes away. It's like you guys remember, Pentagon happened like an hour later, and Flight 93 was even later than that. And it's like, where were the planes? You know,
exactly.
Where were these things we call the Air Force? I mean, they should have had, I mean, it's Washington, D.C. I mean, they should have had so many planes up, you've been worried about them bumping into each other. You know, it's amazing. You know what I mean?
You would think so.
Nothing going on. Like, oh, no, we thought we wouldn't send anybody up. No, we didn't think anybody would do it here in Washington.
But that's happened a number of times before, including the guy who landed the plane on the White House lawn, didn't he?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I mean, you know, they've got portable, from what I remember, they've got like, you know, they don't tell you specifically, but, you know, they've admitted, you know, they've got short-range rockets and the whole thing in the White House up on the roof, you know, in case something like that happens. So you've got to think, guys, they must have a radar unit up there. You know, I mean, it was just a portable radar unit, you know. You figure if something comes within a mile of there, it should start screaming. You know, at some minor range. You know, I mean, not, you ain't going to read something 20 miles off, but you got to figure that thing, if you come within a mile, this is pre-9/11. So if you came within a mile or 2 miles of the White House, you know, and something that ain't scheduled, that somewhere somebody's saying, what's this?
Absolutely. And I just was informed, actually, by one of our chat room people that What Liberal Media is written by Eric Alterman.
That's it. Sorry. Well, like I said, it's a really good read when you go back and, you know, some of the things that we always say fall down the memory hole that if you don't think about them, you know, disappear down the line. I was talking that in about 6 weeks, I guess it is, six or about maybe 2 months, you know, An Inconvenient Truth is coming out this next week or another week or so after, you know what I mean, depending where you are. There's one coming out in the middle of the summer called Who Killed the Electric Car? That involves that, I think it was Ford in the early 2001, somewhere through there, had this thing out in California where they had all these electric cars that the government made them destroy. Oh, yeah.
They made them destroy?
I remember this story, and I saw this thing on it, and all of a sudden it clicked into my memory about it, you know what I mean? That the government sued these people, I don't know if it sued Ford, but they sued these people that were trying to keep them running and made them destroy them. So that's just a little independent film to keep your eyes open for.
I definitely will. All right, Luke, we got to take a quick break, my friend. But we will definitely look forward to hearing from you again next week, my friend.
All righty. See ya. Bye.
Okay, have a good week. Okay. And you're listening to, what is the name of the show again? Oh, yeah, All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com. When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
You're back on All Things Reconsidered. This is Bruce Birch, and I'm back with you after that short little break, and then we'll do a real quick segment here as well. I just wanted to inform you a little bit about, you know, Luke just called in and talked about a couple of things that are kind of important. One is a book by Eric Alterman entitled What Liberal Media, and if you actually go to whatliberalmedia.com, you can check that out, and well, not check it out like a library, check it out, but you can, you know, check out the website anyway. And you can also, I was just told by Arbor Tender in the chat room, thank you, Arbor Tender, that you can get the skinny on the retracted electric car by going to EV1.org, and the one is a number one. It's not spelled out. www.ev and then the number one .org. So if you're so inclined on checking out either one of those websites, please do so. We are an unabashed supporter of all things liberal and progressive here. We're not going to try to keep you limited to, since you're sitting in front of your computer listening, you may as well go and do some surfing as well. And there's some really neat pictures on there. Apparently, this car was retracted by GM, crushed, shredded, dumped into the foundry. Oh my goodness! Big Oil has so much power. It's really quite amazing. Well, you know, and another thing, I just will share this as an aside. I heard recently that the same group that sponsored the space race, the private space race, where you know, they had the people who were competing to come up with a vehicle that would go up and fly in space and then come back down. That same group is now sponsoring a contest to come up with a 500 mile per gallon vehicle. So I tell you what I'll do is I'll try to dig up some information on that and come back with it next week. But I just wanted to bring that to your attention. There are people out there who are funding innovation in these areas. It's just a matter of us choosing to avail ourselves of that and demand of our government, of course, once we get this government out, to demand of our government that they need to absolutely, start pushing some of these things. Some of these wonderful progressive things. Now, it's not just the way that George is doing his jobs. Apparently, I just wanted to share this with you. Apparently, Americans don't like him personally either. And this is out of the Washington. I'm sorry, this was out of Knight Ridder newspapers. Now, he not only has he lost his job approval rating, but apparently he's lost his likability rating too. A recent poll by Jiang Zogby says it was that his likability was down to 42% with a favorable opinion, 55% unfavorable. November 2004, it was 58% favorable, 40% unfavorable. USA Today poll showed that he had a 39% favorable opinion and 60% unfavorable. CBS New York Times, wow, 29% had a favorable opinion of Bush, while 55% had an unfavorable opinion. And I guess the others in the middle just didn't know what the hell they think. Those are the people who can't decide what movie they're going to go to or what they're going to eat for dinner. They keep you waiting in line at the drive-thru. So there you go. I mean, I think that this is going to be the tale that wags the dog, in that he had some capital as long as he was a funny, guffawing kind of guy. Well, now people are just saying, you know what, you pretty much just suck. So. And also to sort of tie back into what Luke and I were speaking about a little while ago, Verizon, a few days ago, has refused to deny participation in the NSA spying program, and they're hiding behind federal government's state secrets privilege. Okay, this was in Portland, Maine. All right, this is out of the Magic City News, Magic City Morning Star, Millinocket, Maine. In a 44-page response to the Maine Public Utilities Commission, Verizon refused to confirm or deny cooperation in the illegal National Security Agency program, arguing that the Public Utilities Commission lacks the authority to investigate whether Verizon has provided NSA access to its customer records and its switching machines in Maine. Verizon further asserted a state secrets privilege. The state secrets privilege, when properly invoked, permits the government to block disclosure of particular documents that would cause harm to national security. So, essentially, even though the national company is denying things, it appears that this state—I'm going to say it's probably a local, more of a local branch of Verizon, but I'm sure this got approved through the national company. That you know, they're saying that, gosh, we're, you know, it looks like to me they're involved. What is interesting? I just want to say this: Portland, Maine. What is interesting, Portland, Maine, is that this story refers to the National Security Agency program as the illegal National Security Agency program, which is a step in the right direction. I should send an email to the person who wrote this and tell them that they're absolutely on target with that. All right. We are going to go straight over to a break, and we'll be back, and we're going to do some talking about John Edwards and some of the things that he said this morning. So stick around. We'll be right back. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things Reconsidered. You can get on the program by dialing 1-877-443-2366 or send me an email if you're so inclined or reclined at this time of night to bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. With my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org, every hearing, every vote, is a yardstick for measuring the spine of our elected representatives. And the hearing and the vote on Michael Hayden to be CIA director is one of the more important measurements. Even before the hearing, senators were saying that Hayden was going to easily receive confirmation. When I heard that, I just couldn't believe it. Here's a guy who engineered the NSA spying program on U.S. citizens without a warrant in direct violation of the FISA law, which says the exclusive means by which the government can spy on U.S. citizens here is with a warrant. Here's a guy who then hooked up this enormous database of the phone calls of some 200 million Americans with help from Verizon, AT&T, and Bell South. And here's a guy who failed to properly consult with Congress about these very activities. So why he deserves kid gloves at the confirmation hearing is beyond me. And it's beyond me why he deserves to be confirmed at all. Watch the vote. See who has the spine to say no, not only to Michael Hayden, but to illegal spying and to Bush's daily exercise of lawless power. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
And you're back on All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I'm your host of this weekly program that runs from 10 to 12 midnight Eastern Time, 7 to 9 Pacific, and everything else in between. You can also catch the podcast by going to allthingsreconsidered.org. I will post that link up pretty soon, or have it up there before tomorrow morning. So you can, if you are so inclined, you do the podcasting thing. You can sign up and you know, throw that URL in there, and it'll update. You can get that podcast downloaded to your iPod or whatever it is that you choose to pod around with. Okay, that's just a bad pun. All right, we're gonna get away from the pod punning And on to something completely different. I told you before the break we're going to talk about John Edwards, and we are, because John was on this week, this morning also, with George Snuffleupagus, and, I mean, Stephanopoulos, something like that. He was on there this morning, and John Edwards was talking about a number of things. Now, he has been working very steadily on a poverty initiative here in North Carolina. He is the head of the UNC Center on Poverty and something else. And he is still unabashedly out in the public eye a lot. And so he did an interview with George this morning and talked about some of the things that he was doing. And we're going to run a series of clips here, and I'm going to introduce each one of them as we go. This clip is actually him speaking about poverty. So, Agnes, if you want to go ahead and run that.
Who is the president? Who is the president that broke the law and the Constitution?
Nope, that's the wrong clip.
Well, he's done a variety of things, things which are going to take us forever to recover from. I think we can recover
from. Not either.
But is, I think you have to convince the country that it's the moral and just thing to do. Second, you have to convince the country that the way you want to deal with poverty embraces the values that most Americans believe.
Country not there yet?
I don't think they're completely there. I think that in their conscience, inside, they're there, but they haven't had any leadership. No one has made them think about it. And you could sort of see that in the reaction to Katrina.
Well, that is absolutely the case. What we're finding is that Mr. Edwards is on the very cusp of an ideal. Poverty is increasing at an alarming rate in the United States. And the gap between the haves and the have-nots has created, in essence, what he called in his presidential campaign the two Americas. And, of course, the patriotic flag-waving right jumped on that and said, "Oh, what are you talking about? There's two Americas, man. But one America. We go got but one America, and that's all we got. And ain't no such thing as two." Anyway. But he was absolutely correct. There are two Americas. There's the America where you have to scrape and make sure that, you know, when you're going through the grocery store, that you buy the store brands and you try to you know figure out how you can stretch that dollar as far as you can. And then there's the other America where the grocery stores themselves carry, you know, items. You know, these are in the ritzy areas where the items on the shelves are, you know, very expensive. I mean, it's, you know, a much more refined taste and much more refined kind of living than the America that, you know, perhaps that the majority of the citizens of this country live in. He also talked about this morning, I have a couple callers on the line, but I want to, hold on, guys, and I'll get to you. He also talked about, let's see the next clip. He also talked about the vice president, and I think this is really a funny clip, you know, that I heard him do this morning, and it was just like I couldn't help but laugh. So if Agnes, you want to run the clip, Edwards on Cheney.
Is watching what the vice president of the United States has done to this country. It is not an accident that he's unbelievably poorly thought of. I can't remember what his last poll numbers are, but they're like in the teens or around 20%. There's a reason for that. I mean, he is one of, if not the principal architect of this disaster in Iraq. He put us on an energy path that American people are paying an enormous price for right now. He paid little or no attention to making sure the government was prepared to respond to the kind of disaster that hit our Gulf Coast. I mean, we've got a health care crisis going on. He's had no proposal of any kind that I know of, and people don't trust him anymore, which is understandable. I wouldn't trust him.
You've also said that his...
And, yeah, that was him talking about the vice president. Now, the next clip you're going to hear is what he thinks about the president. Agnes, if you could go ahead and run that.
Who is the president? Who is the president that broke the law and the Constitution and started spying on the American people?
Yeah.
The answer to that question, as we've already heard, is George W. Bush, the worst president in my lifetime.
The worst president ever. The worst president he's seen in his lifetime. Now, he's not all that old. You know, I mean, I don't think there's too many people alive left that remember what was that guy's name back in the before Roosevelt. I can't remember it. Anyway, Humphrey or whoever it was. And then there's the last clip I want to run before I get over to the telephone lines. The last clip is what he spoke about during the interview regarding George Bush and some of the things that he's done. Agnes, if you want to run that.
Well, he's done a variety of things which are going to take us forever to recover from. I think we can recover from them. But the damage that he's done to the way America is viewed in the world, the lack of respect for America in the world, what the ongoing conflict in Iraq is doing to America's image, his response to this hurricane on the Gulf Coast, which I think is part of a pattern of incompetence.
But if he's worse than Richard Nixon, should President Bush be impeached?
Well, I think the way to deal with this is that we need a Democratic president in the next election. I think the damage that this president has done, I mean, I didn't get through the whole list. For example, leading an effort, illegal effort, I think it's absolutely clear that it's illegal, an effort to spy on Americans, completely ignoring the law and the Constitution. I mean, the president knew, and his advisors knew.
He says he has the authority under the Constitution, Article 2 of the Constitution.
He is wrong. He is wrong. It is the reason we have a separation of powers in this country. And the Congress had enacted a law that told the president exactly what he was supposed to do. And he just ignored it, intentionally ignored it. If there was any question about this, the very least they should have done is go to the Congress and try to get the law changed.
And what's so interesting about that is that actually Michael Hayden, who is now being vetted as the new director of the CIA, or for that position, Michael Hayden actually came forth and said something along the lines of, well, you know, when he was asked, would he be against the rewriting of the FISA law? And his response was, well, you know, and basically it was, yeah, well, we would be okay with that. So, you know, as John Edwards just said, in essence, this president is acting as if he is the chief, he is the Der Führer, dear leader. And he's right. The only way to try to combat this, and it's going to take forever to fix the things that he's botched up. They have worked so hard over the last 5 years to completely undo any sort of progressive approach to governing, you know, that it's going to take, you know, to ferret out all of the negativity and all of the crap that they've created. It's going to take a long time to do that. So, and that was John Edwards from this week with George Snuffleupagus this morning. And I understand we have Peter on line one. Peter from, I think, Tallahassee, Florida, maybe. Peter, are you there?
Sure. Good evening to you.
Top of the evening to you, sir.
The evening to
it's
you.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. You know, what you were talking about at the beginning of the show when you ran down that huge list of words that attempted to describe, you know, these people, it started me thinking, you know, I, at this point I'm pretty much convinced that Barbara Bush and the whole damn Bush family, I think they must be aliens from like another dimension. You know, if you were an alien race and you were coming here to destroy this planet and inhabit it perhaps after we're all gone, what would you do? Well, the best way to do that, as far as I can see, is you destroy the government and all of the social services that are associated with it. You destroy the church and make it completely irrelevant and not credible and the laughing stock. You destroy the environment to the point that I don't know if it will ever recover. You destroy, you know, one of the largest nations, not to build up the United States compared to other countries, but I mean, you know, the United States for a long time has been a stabilizing factor in the world. You destroy that country's credibility throughout the world. Did I mention the economy? Maybe I did. I don't know. But you know, we're trillions of dollars in debt. I cannot imagine a more effective attack on this planet than what's happening right now, and it's staggering in proportions. There's not a word for it. You know, that's why you had to read a list that long. We are actually in a situation where there isn't a word in the English language that encompasses the depths of evil. Do you know what? I'm struggling here. What is there a word?
bastards.
But I know.
Goddamned bastards.
But yes, it's true. But there's.
I think I can say that on air. I'm not sure.
We are at the point that we actually have to coin a new word, a brand new word, because none of the other words work. How long did you read that list? For like 5 minutes? And it was incredible.
I think so. Well, it was a good long list, wasn't it? I was beginning to wonder if I was going to be able to get to the end of it or not without laughing too hard, you know?
I was amazed you got through all that. And every bit of it was true, every word of it. You know, I was hanging on to it going, yes, 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 yes. And I became more and more frustrated because there's no word that represents it. And I just don't know what we're going to do. Even if we get these people out of power, there's so much damage, you know, that the Barbara Bush flying saucers are going to come in here with, you know, white fuzzy tops and land and start just shooting us. We're screwed. Excuse me. We really are in a bad shape.
Well, I have a question for you.
The media, too. What do you add that to the list? The social services, the environment, the economy, the media, it's lost complete credibility. We're attacked on every front. It's global. These people are aliens, dude.
Dude, they're aliens. Aliens. Well, they certainly are acting completely to the opposite of what, you know, anyone that I know. And the people that I know that like them, really challenge their humanity as well.
Well, yeah, there you go. There you go. They too are not plugged into humanity in the way that people who were born on this planet would be. You know, talk about aliens. I think that they're really here, and they're not coming from Mexico.
No, they're not coming from Mexico.
It's horrifying.
It absolutely is, and I think time will tell. I mean, just to back away from the whole thing, but a little bit. I think time will tell the true impact they're going to have. We have fussed a lot about some of the things that they've done politically. I think that the long-term effects are going to be felt by those people who have the least voice, and that would be, of course, those who are living at the poverty line and under. And not to, like, you know, to take this conversation into a sad place, but what happened in New Orleans was completely criminal. And those people, right now, I was on a conference call Friday where I learned that the majority of the people who have been outsourced, there's that word again, to places outside of New Orleans are now being mainstreamed, therefore, what that means is that the services that they're receiving now have to come directly out of, established mainstream social services money rather than special pots of money that were created in the wake of Katrina. How much money did they spend down there?
Oh,
do you remember,
it was a
Peter?
Chunk that was supposed to be allocated. I guess we all suspected that would never materialize, but there was a whole lot of money allocated.
So those people, hundreds of thousands of people, are now, I mean, that money's run out, basically. And they're now expected to just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get the hell on with their lives. And, you know, and it's just, it's criminal. It's absolutely criminal.
Well, it is. And the groups that are affected the most, as you said, are the poor, and then there are the elderly and the very young who are inheriting this national debt of staggering proportions. And
absolutely.
The only people left standing have been infected by the pod people. I don't know what we're going to do. It's getting pretty creepy, at least in my neck of the woods. I'm getting creeped out. Really am.
Well, tell me about this guy down in Florida who is running for governor, who's a Democrat, and he's also a former union guy. Do you know anything about him?
I'm afraid not, Bruce. I'm afraid not.
Okay.
You know, we
We've had Jeb for so long, and then most of the campaigning and that sort of thing has been taking place on television. And I've got to tell you, I have pretty much stopped watching regular TV. I just can't take it, and I guess I need to plug back into that. What's going on in Florida regarding that a little bit more deeply. I have gotten pretty much into national / world news, and but no, I don't. But Jeb has got to go. And here in the Capitol, you know, there's this whole thing that works a lot like it does in Washington, D.C. You dare not say anything against Jeb. So state employees typically have to whisper if they're dissatisfied and don't come out and say anything. Even in public meetings, there's whispering. There was a Democracy in the Park thing that was here a good while back, and the guy couldn't say too much. He was a county commissioner who spoke there, and in any case, he was talking about when trying to get Jeb out of office, but he really couldn't go too deeply into that because the capital of Florida is a lot like Washington D.C. There's so much secrecy and intrigue. You can't speak your mind here. That free speech is gone. It's dangerous.
And that's incredibly unfortunate.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
You know, and I totally agree with you. I want to run this article by you too, Peter, since I have you on the phone, because I know that you and I in the past, in the times that you've called the program, that you are a deeply religious fellow, right?
Yes, I do believe that a lot of things that have become very personal to me. That word belief is scary, but they're internalized. They're my beliefs and they're personal. So, and I don't spread them and then lay them at folks' feet. But yeah, I attend church regularly, and I'm deeply involved with that, and I'm concerned for the church too. What's the article?
Well, the article is actually out of the Washington Post, and it was yesterday. And the title of the article is "Religious Liberals Gain New Visibility."
Ah, yes. Yes, I read that article.
What did you think about that?
I thought it was interesting. And I also had a feeling in the back of my mind while I was reading it was, is it too late? Simply because the credibility of the church in anything religious has been shot to hell. For so long, the thrust has been that if you were not part of the religious right, you were not a true believer, or you were not part of the church, or in other words, anyone who was a liberal or leaning to the left, or even centrists, were marginalized, and those voices were taken away. And here again, the damage to the church is immense. There's not a whole lot of people out there who are educated and literate who don't laugh at the mainstream media's presentation of the church, because like the media in every other respect focuses on the right-wing extremist voice, just like they do. Sure. With the right-wing extremist government, you have to start searching to find any moderate voices or any liberal voices. Like, we have to search for programs like yours and the Head On Radio Network. We have to search for these things out. You don't get it on mainstream news, and I'm wondering if it's too late. I'm glad to hear there's organization going on, and I think it was the Unitarian Church was mentioned in the article, and there were probably some others, but that particular name stands out. It's just that I wonder if it's too late, Bruce. Like, I'm wondering about these other things, the government, the economy, and all the environment. Is it all just too late? I don't know.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. I think that if anything, when we if we see that the degree of organization going, that it's up to us to sort of like, okay, what can I do to help? You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
And I guess that's probably because I'll be the idealist to the very, when they put the gun upside my head there in Guantanamo, I'll still be going, I got another thing to do tomorrow.
Yeah. Sometimes I get so frustrated. I go to a small Methodist church here, and in the rural South, and by and large it's not an oppressive place to be, but by God, there's some folks there that sure believe in flag and nation and kind of blur separation of church and state. I'm the sound guy there.
So
I was informed that this coming Sunday, it's Memorial Day weekend, you understand. So I was informed that this coming Sunday, they're going to be bringing me a CD I'm supposed to slip in of the national anthem. Oh, dear God, Bruce, I could have died. I am going to have to play the freaking national anthem in a church service next week. You know, it's just part of my job, but by the same token, this whole thing about the church and the state, all sleeping together in these blurring of lines makes me sick. It is this whole nationalist church thing. You know, Christ didn't talk about religious borders. For crying out loud.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
And as a matter of fact, in Leviticus, if I remember correctly, I heard Mike Malloy the other night repeat some lines out of Leviticus, you know, the book of the Bible they used to bash the gays with.
Yeah, that's the old bashing book. Yeah, Leviticus.
The old bashing book.
Yeah.
That actually in Leviticus it talks about it says that there are no borders, and that if you are defining borders within the land, that you are blasphemed and you're going to hell or something like that.
Yes, and to treat the aliens as equals, or to accept them in because you were once aliens, I think, in the land of Israel. I forget how the verse went. And he was eloquent. He did a great job. I heard him when he did that. Often at my advanced years, I don't make it too far into the Malloy show, but the other night I stayed up and I was glad I heard him go through that. That was pretty good.
That was a pretty intensive program, but you know, maybe we'll get him on this network sometime real soon.
Yeah, I normally have recorders running. Maybe I can slice out a few classic lines from next week's sermon, and I'll shoot them off to you, and we could do a little show and tell of the rural South here on Memorial Day weekend. That might be good. A little bit of covert activity might do my heart good.
That'll be fun. We'll save that one for Bob's prayer meeting on
Wednesday. Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. He's going to hell. He's recording this sermon and he shipped them liberals. He's going to go to hell.
All right, man.
Okay, buddy. You take care.
Great to hear from you, Peter. And you know, don't be a stranger now.
I know. I've been shy lately. I've been going through a shy stage, but I'm getting over it. I'm turning mean again.
There you go.
Okay, I'll talk to you later, dude.
We like the mean Peter.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, there's plenty of that to go around.
Okay.
See you soon, dude. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a good... Okay, bye. And that was our good friend Peter from Tallahassee, Florida. Peter was one of the first folks that was really supportive of this radio program and hadn't heard from for a while, so it's good to hear him back on the radio Just a really wonderful guy. Wonderful guy. We're about 5 minutes to the end of the show. As I try to end every show on an upbeat, positive note, you know, the one thing that I do want to say is that there is a possible way out of this, and that is if you, listener, do what you can to get out there and create change in the world around you. You can do that any number of ways. You can do that by, you know, going and working for your local Democratic Party. You can do that by going and getting involved in other groups that are around you that are helping build trying to help out other people. I mean, you know, volunteer your time in a homeless shelter. You're helping people when you do that. You're creating a new change in the world around you when you do that. You know, you can do any number of things. I like to have conversations with people I've never met before. I like to say that I've never met a stranger. And I do that everywhere I go. It bugs the hell out of my wife, but I do it anyway. So do that this week. Get out there. Try to make a difference. Try to make a change in the world around you. You know, carry yourself in that peaceful, positive way that only can draw people to you. So, ladies and gentlemen, the show tonight was brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream, and they're helping support us. And we're building the American dream also right here on the Head On Radio Network. The show was engineered, John Fox is our chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Thank you, John, for doing such a great job at what you're doing. Agnes Kincaid produces my radio program, and she did a fantastic job there in the wild, wonderful mountains of West Virginia, where the home offices of the Head On Radio Network exist. And, I just wanted to say to all of those folks who called in tonight and to all of you who come back week after week and listen to this radio program, I just want to say thank you. You know, by being a part of this program, you know, you are expressing your desire to see something different in the world around you. And that means everything, because it all starts with a desire. So thanks so much for listening this week. I'll be back with you next Sunday night. Who knows? You may hear me cover for somebody else in between now and then, or you can catch my news on the during Bob Kincaid's show during the week. If you want the archive of this radio program, you can go to headonradionetwork.com, and that'll take you, click on the link to the White Rose Society, and you can download it there. Or you can go to allthingsreconsidered.org, and also you can have access to the archives there. So it's good to be with you this week, and we will see you soon. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bruce Birch, and I'll talk to you soon.
It was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. And when the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory.